This podcast was recorded on Bundjalung land of the Arakwal Nation. What's up, everybody? My name is Luca Lesson, and this is the Future Ancients podcast. I'm so stoked to bring this episode to you. I'm really proud of this episode. This episode is with a woman named Tamika Wilder, and she is part of an organization called Neosoma. And Neosoma and Tamika's work are focused on uplifting the planet, really, through the process of healing people's connection with each other, with relationships, and with sex in their bodies. And this process that she talks about is quite deep, the way that she talks about it. And I was really impressed with how many different layers there were to this conversation. We talked about yin and yang and gender equality or gender balance within relationships. We talked about collective grief in these strange times in the world, the future of sex education, the old Tantra Instagram model versus the actual grounded deep teachings of Tantra that can be found beyond what we see online, as well as men stepping up in these strange times, and racism and racists who might just be lacking love or good sex, what might be a part of them being so angry at the world. We had a great conversation across this and many other topics, and I really hope you enjoy this podcast episode. At the end of this episode, I placed a new poem called Love Made This, something that I've performed on tour before, very, very briefly. Not many people have heard it, but I just felt like there was no better poem to suit this conversation with Tamika. So I hope you enjoy this episode of the Future Ancients podcast. Hello, Tamika Wilder. Welcome to the Future Ancients podcast.
Hello, Luca.
That's my presenter's voice. You like that?
I love it.
Yeah. How are you?
Yeah, I'm in Melbourne, but I'm good.
Yeah. Tell me about that. Well, there's a caveat to that. It's not fun, huh?
Nah, it's not fun. It's pretty dense here. It's dense. We're in lockdown. Lots of frustration building, but I definitely am one of the lucky ones because, you know, I'm here in my home, I've got my family supported.
Yeah.
So, but yeah.
Awesome. Good to hear that you're doing well. Good to hear that you and the fam are solid in these intense times. Yeah. And good to hear about Neosoma. You want to tell me a little bit about what you've been up to?
Sure. So Neosoma was born after I attempted to start a conscious consulting company with one of my really good friends who I studied kinesiology and some other bits and pieces with. And we had this idea we were going to go into businesses and really just help people in the workplace, like free up a little bit in terms of their thoughts and their ways of being so they could connect better and all that kind of stuff. And what started happening was more and more my past and all of my passion was just tapping me on the shoulder like, yeah, but Tamika, what about this other thing? What about that embodiment thing? What about that sex thing? And you're always doing this relationship thing. And I'm like, oh. And then I finally turned to face it. And so we separated and we didn't do Neo-being anymore. And we created Neosoma. It was all just about coming home into the body. And the more I chose Neosoma, the more it grew. And I found myself just exactly where I was always meant to be.
Awesome. Yeah. And so now that involves kinesiology and couples therapy and sex advice / therapy and continued learning, I imagine, on your end and all the above.
Yes. So yeah, I do somatic sexology, which is helping people understand and calm their nervous system to a point where they can connect more deeply with their sensation, with their breath, with the intelligence of the body, because that's the place where we learn everything. We participate in life through the body, not just intellect, not just language. you know.
I've just been so, I'm so glad we're having this conversation. The last, well, since all this shit went down and I was, you know, for the first time in 10 years at home for longer than, you know, a month at a time without needing to catch a plane or tour or perform or do anything else. I've finally been able to focus on my health as a major practice over these last few months and face a lot of the things, health issues that I've been avoiding and running from, and also facing along the way. I've been doing a lot of different things for the past 10 years since I started with chronic headaches. So I've had a chronic headache issue for 10 years, basically some kind of head pain every day. Whoa. And yeah, so I recently fell in love with two things, Feldenkrais and Qigong. Mm. And those two things together have completely changed the way I relate to my body. I feel like I have a new body.
Yes.
And I am noticing through that just how important and kind of, I don't know, it's not talked about as much as I think it should be.
Totally.
How important the nervous system is.
Yes.
Like, I could go to the gym a million times, but if I'm jacked up and my nervous system is fully tight, it literally has no effect, or it has an adverse effect. And I just put more of that stress in my body.
100%.
But if I turn up to whatever it might be exercise wise with a relaxed nervous system, with a relaxed, which they also talk about connected so much to the fascia and all of these kind of more subtle aspects of the body, I feel so much more ready to be in my body, to exercise, to move, to, you know, and not feel this like jacked up sensation afterwards, which would always lead to more headaches, even though I was trying to exercise.
Yeah.
I always felt that exercise was giving me more stress in my body.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really powerful. And, you know, now, and I'm sure we'll get into it, talking about how the nervous system and sex relate as well.
Mm. Yeah, yeah. I feel like another kind of piece that is often, people just don't know the way in which we hold memories and we store trauma and we hold our emotions even. We think it's all cognitive, like I have this thought and oh, my mind, it's all up here. But actually the way that our emotions and our thoughts interact with our hormonal landscape and the neuropeptides that are released into our body that are like drugs, you know, it's our body has an experience of the world in every single moment. So learning more about the experience of the body, we can free up and get way more range.
You're basically bypassing so many other processes where you could talk about this memory 100 times in therapy session, or you could literally just release the nervous system around it, the body memory around it.
Yep.
And that memory like doesn't come up again. I had things that I used to think about all the time that I don't think about anymore. That used to be traumas that I would relive 100 times a week, and now they're not around, you know. Totally. And it's not because I did, you know, hours of therapy or faced the person or called them up or did some kind of dramatic thing. It's literally just releasing.
You change your body's experience of it.
Yeah.
You change your brain's experience of it as well.
Yeah. And I think in Feldenkrais, they talk about how it's like, even though you work with the body, you're really remapping the brain's map of the body. You're like reintegrating it or connecting more subtly with it.
How good are humans? How clever are we?
Epic. Mad, man. So epic. So let's go macro for a second. I've got this question for you because mainly I was inspired by this great poet friend of mine, Mahogany L. Brown from New York. And she would say that love is such a huge part of the revolution. And she's, you know, an organizer as well and involved with Black Lives Matter movement and everything on the ground, and an incredible poet, great human being. And I wondered if you, you know, just to ask this question in a more broad sense, where does sex come into the revolution? Where does it change and shift, and how can it influence that going forward?
It's definitely one of the cooler questions I've ever been asked. I do lots of these chats.
Yes.
And this is so good. because I think like always in my education and in my sessions and my group calls and such, I'm always trying to speak to this element of us becoming so connected and free inside of our expression. And our unlimited expression includes our sexual expression, includes our sexuality, includes our pleasure, our eroticism, our playfulness, our that kind of frequency is the thing that I believe when we're in connection with puts, it elevates our voice. It elevates that enough, no more, or I need this, or I want this, or I need to stand for this. It's like this boldness and this, real connection to self and our power that comes, I think, with our sexuality. And when we put a lid on an aspect of our human nature, it's usually, you know, a fear or a protection. And while we're in fear and in protection and in this subservience or this smallness or this hiding or closeness, we cannot be self-expressed. We cannot create change. We cannot rally. We cannot uplift. You know, you've heard of Audre Lorde and the erotic as power. In her article, like her kind of essay, she speaks to this a lot about our pleasure and eroticism actually being the biggest access point to our power. And I think that's what the revolution needs. That's what the world needs. It needs grounded erotic intelligence to help uplift us and our voices and our internal knowing.
And would you say that so much of the hatred that we have between each other, maybe not the hatred itself, because obviously, you know, all different sorts of prejudice are taught to us in certain ways. But the acting out of that prejudice, the acting out of that hate towards each other, the ability to be so disembodied that you can commit a violent crime against somebody else somehow. I mean, I know everything is interrelated, but somehow can this be related to a reduced sense of our own sexuality, a reduced embodiment, a reduced idea of pleasure, a suppression of pleasure, a suppression of self-love, a suppression of connection. Love, I guess, is you know, overall, that's the totally, simplest and straight up way of saying it. Are violently racist people having bad sex? That's the question.
I would say definitely. Yeah, I do. I feel like suppression.
I mean, if they had real love in their lives, they wouldn't. Yeah. They wouldn't want to, right?
Yeah. Suppression and fear, and like fear of other, and it's the chronic living in our head, I think. So we could probably even go a step like back to embodiment, actually.
Yeah.
And like when we believe and subscribe and surrender to these thoughts of fear and separation and us versus them and violence and right and wrong and black and white, that all lives in the head and in conditioned beliefs. None of that lives or survives when you become embodied, when you come into the realm of play, eroticism, pleasure, sexuality, liberation. Far less of that can survive there. So
I love that way of putting it, that it doesn't survive that transition into the body.
Yep.
I have a lot of being a writer, you know, like so much of my work is intellectual and in the head and only in the head. And I have a lot of ideas and cool words and mad, you know, wordplay and whatever. And I do notice that when I get a treatment or when I reconnect with nature and with my wife, you know, more fully or whatever it might be, that some ideas or some great lines or some certain poems aren't going to make it out into the world because they don't survive in that space. Yeah. So I've started to like stop certain poems from going out into the world when they are.
Yeah.
When I know that they're way too much about that headspace and argument and that intellectual tussling of concepts and ideals that don't really lead us. Yeah. I hope my work would lead us to a more embodied place or a more, you know, revelatory or a place of alchemy, you know, of shifting. So yeah, that's a really interesting point that some concepts just don't survive. Some ideologies don't survive that transition into the body.
And I guess like it also kind of makes me think of the way that relationships are structured as well, in a way, like the possessive nature of humans kind of come through in the way that we relate with one another. And I think that's a ripple effect that is kind of felt with the way we interact as well. I guess that's a we could talk a whole nother hour
Amazing.
About like relationship structures and stuff.
So, all right, I'm going to jump to the next question. Do you have a piece of knowledge or information or advice around relationships and love that was maybe passed down to you through family lineage or, doesn't have to be family, but somehow something from the past that you bring forward in your work?
Yes. It's interesting. I think of this a fair bit about the way that I choose to live my life in the way in which my parents couldn't, and the way in which their parents couldn't. Not only did they not know how to, but the structures and the systems weren't in place for them to thrive in relationship, I believe, in the way that I feel like I'm able to now. And so they didn't teach me necessarily what to do. It was more about I tuned into what not to do, or I tuned into, okay, they had it like this. What do I want to create for me that they couldn't? Do you have something? Were you going to say something?
No.
You're just breathing.
I was just breathing it in. I was just like, yep, can relate.
Yeah. So I think
that's every generation's job in a way, yeah? To just take the next step.
Take the next step, interrupt the patterns.
Improve.
Change, improve it, yeah. I think about my mum, actually. Like, she was she did things very differently for her generation. So born and bred in Victoria, like Geelong, Irish Catholic situation. She left and went to Europe for 10 years at a time when that would have been like the 50s.
I think.
It's really different.
By herself. Epic.
And one of the last things my nan said to her apparently was, you know, don't go getting mixed up with any of those, I don't know, she said black people, or I don't know, she said something that obviously
fully activated
my mother's like full rebellious, like, yeah, oh, yeah. Okay.
Whatever my mum doesn't want me to do,
yeah, I'll disappear. That's what I'm gonna do. Yeah, and come back with this black man and one of his kids, you know, and then another three. And I think about the way she approached things like health. So we were brought up on things like, I remember seeing a kinesiologist when I was 4 or 5 years old. You know, I understand why I became a qualified kinesiologist, because it's in my history. You know, she gave us homeopathics. She fed us natural foods. Like, I give my kids homeopathics. So I thank her for those pieces. And so I could take that and go, all right, and what's my next big step? You know, and so for me, it was about creating relationship structure that works for me. And
And I guess rather than making the same decisions she made, you're making decisions kind of like she made, you know, like you're
correct.
You're, you know, a rebel and an anarchist in terms of I always find it's a great compliment as well. Like you're making decisions in the way that she made decisions. Like, sounds like she was extremely independent.
That's it, before her time. Yeah. So lots of gratitude for that. And also my dad, I think what I want to give him props for is he's always been an oracle. He's bold, he speaks, he's a musician, a performer. So they met when he was on stage in London, and he's playing lots of multi-instrument, very talented man in that regard. And a big piece of my history that brought me to where I am now was my performance, was a bit of my poetry, it was my ability to kind of be on stages, be with people, that chameleon-like aspect that I think it really takes to say some of the pretty bold things that I say and speak on this thing around sex. Like, there's lots of taboo and lots of shame there. And I think what my dad gave me was that part of him, which was like, say it how it is, use your voice. So thanks, Dad.
Good work, Dad.
Yeah.
All right. So next question before we can just, you know, go down a rabbit hole for a bit. How can men better show up for their partners, no matter who their partners might be? What I know that this is a huge generalized question, but no matter how individual and different I think I am, when I read and look up and listen, I still end up doing man things because I'm a man. So how can men better show up for their partners in your experience or even at the moment for what's going on in the world?
So I feel like there's an answer to this question around like physical connection and in sexuality. And then there's an answer to this question that is like in general. And for me, the image that comes to mind is like a man who stands in his and his power and in his, I don't know if I want to say confidence, it seems a little bit like of a boring word, but just that man who can really, really be in his strength and actually be in that role of leadership, even though sometimes it feels like it's tricky for a woman to be with a man who is fully setting boundaries and being in his power and his strength. I think that's the greatest gift because in that place, I feel like a man is more present there. He's like searing, he's in his posture, he's not wavering. I think like a lot of the women I talk to, they describe experiences in their relationships where all of they're saying is like, he's just flimsy.
Yeah, right? I've heard this described as a man is attractive basically when he is emotionally erect.
Yes.
In his life. Like he is erect and hard and doing his thing and he knows what he's doing and he fucking goes for it and he's basically a walking penis.
Yes.
A walking hard penis.
That's it.
But when he's flippy floppy, no good.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just more, that's my response. Like, and the presence that comes when you're erect is like, that's hot. That's beautiful. That is like.
You're doing your shit. You're focused. Your shit. You're loving it. You're into it. You're fully present with it. You're not thinking about it. It's your dream. It's what you love. It's how you roll. And you're 100% in it. And then for me, I get incredibly satisfied when I have even just 2 days or 2 hours a day of writing. If I can write for 2 hours a day with no distraction, I step up away from the desk and I'm like, that was, you know, like now I can be present with my lady. I can be present with the garden. I can be present with other things in my life, friends, whatever, because I've done what I need to do. I've fulfilled my purpose for at least 2 hours in a day, you know?
Totally.
And I find that powerful for both of us really to have that, to make sure we both get that. We both get to satisfy a part of our creativity or our purpose every day.
Yeah. Yeah. And that creates, I think, a soft place or a place where if you're having a heteronormative kind of example, where the feminine, like your wife, for example, can be in her creativity, in her softness, in her letting go, in her play, in her chaos, in her creator, and all those things that have been labeled as inherently feminine, because there are lots of women I feel like that are leaning over into their masculinity because the man doesn't have it. And we've got families to take care of. We've got, you know, women are earning, we're doing things. So it's like, cool, I got to posture up. I got to strengthen up and straighten up. I can't be letting go. I can't be surrendering into the bliss that exists in my body and my orgasmic potential because he doesn't have this structure. So I've got to set the structure. Whereas we want you to set the structure. We want you to create the container, the boundary for us to play in our feminine. Surrender and reception and nurture and all of that stuff.
In carrying that conversation over, because we're also talking about yin and yang and masculine and feminine, and we all have a part of each of it within us, and touching on relationships that are different in terms of gender to a heteronormative one, do you think that those roles could be reversed? There could be a woman that is more of the structure, or someone who identifies as female is more of the structure, and
totally,
and someone who identifies as male that is, you know, soft and creates the home and creates the space and the openness for that strength to walk into type thing.
I do. I feel like
it all, you've seen it all, I'm guessing.
I've seen it all. And I feel like whatever structure, as long as there is balance, like I do feel like the rule that I see and feel is more about yin and yang rather than gender. And however you strike balance within your relationship is perfect and divine for you. It actually has nothing to do with gender. And I'm learning more and more how to, unattach these kind of concepts from gender. We all are, you know, but it is difficult moment to moment for me. I am definitely still learning, but yin and yang and balance, however you strike it.
Awesome.
You know, at the moment, like I'm experiencing a lot of that in my home. I'm working, my partner's with boys. I earn, he was a DJ and then there was COVID, you know. But we have to find balance and harmony. Otherwise we're in trouble some days.
Yeah. But then maybe that's like, I find that, you know, when everything happened for me with COVID and everything got canceled, I was simultaneously incredibly disappointed because I had like the best year ever set up and ready to roll. And simultaneously extremely relieved.
Yep.
And I feel very, very lucky to be able to be where I am with who I am in the time of my life that I am. I think it would be disrespectful to say that I think COVID is a blessing because so many people have suffered from it. But the closures and some of the things that have come with it, or at least the way that we've been able to accept and be fluid with the things that have come with it, have really been a gift. And I guess for your man, the good man that he is, it's an opportunity for him to soften or to find that space, or to understand that part of the yin and yang between you both. And
absolutely,
in many ways for me, it's like the only way, you know, is to see it like that as an opportunity rather than to fight against something so unfuckwithable.
Totally. It's the big grinding halt that a lot of people needed.
Mm.
You know? And part of the reason, you know, I have so many clients like, okay, I need some help around this stuff around intimacy. It's like, oh, all of the distractions are gone.
Awesome.
All of the structures that would be keeping you separate, actually, but just lying down next to each other as best friends every night, all of them are gone. And now the truth has been illuminated to the point where, we've all got to move, adapt.
Awesome.
Mm.
Awesome. The flip side of that, though, is that some people are stuck at home in abusive relationships.
Mm.
I was surprised to hear that in Melbourne that the suicide rate has gone down. I thought that it would go up in this period of time, especially through winter and with closures and everything like that. Have you seen, or do you know that there's more of an instance also of people getting out of difficult situations? I guess that is a form of waking up as well.
Yeah, I guess for the people that are privileged enough to arrive in my coaching, they are, you know, they have an agility and an opportunity to be getting out of a certain situation that they recognize isn't serving them. I've heard different things about suicide and the impacts on mental health, I think, won't be fully understood until things change.
That's what I felt 100%. The suicide rate in Australia before all this happened was a man would take his life every 6 hours, I think. Before that, the best statistics had come from a 2017 national report. So I wouldn't have expected things to go down, but I saw something, a news article about Melbourne that rates had gone down. But I agree with you that the pressures, the financial pressures, social pressures, being stuck in spaces without it, you know, like Melbourne especially is such a social place.
Totally.
A deeply social place. It's so deeply embedded in, I mean, that's what I loved. That's why I lived there for the years that I did, because it's just...
Exactly.
It's a real city, man. It's a real beautiful city.
Yeah.
And I would imagine that things are going to be difficult, like you say, into the future.
Mm.
But it's hard to get a grasp. And I guess that's the situation that we're in. We're all stuck at home and we're all looking at our screens to try and find information because we're not really sharing as much information one-on-one as we used to in public places, that any old report could show up on our screens and we can roll with it without doing our own research.
Totally. Which, you know, that's not too far from what people do anyway, really.
Mm.
Like the research is, what does the screen say today? And then...
Yeah.
Filters, am I going to chuck that through? And then what beliefs am I going to like?
Yeah, which bit of a man am I going to use?
Yeah. I was going to say, though, I feel like it's interesting we are less connected physically, but I feel like more and more people are talking about things like collective grief, collective trauma, collective dense kind of energies or whatever it is. I don't think that's a narrative that some people who don't necessarily see themselves as spiritual or whatever, that's something I think new. It's like, oh, does it, everyone's like, do you feel that? Like, today's not so great. And we're like, oh yeah, I'm feeling that. We find it everywhere. It's weird. We don't need to be seeing one another or even having conversations to be feeling that.
Do you think the part of that's because COVID's been like the great unifier, the great leveler that all across the world, for the first time possibly ever, every single country in the world has kind of either been touched by or at least been thrown into a spiral of fear around this exact same thing, the exact same little microscopic virus. It's the first time possibly in the history of humanity that we've all been traumatized by the same thing in some way at the same time. So we're ironically all on the same page for like the first time in some capacity.
In some capacity, as far as being affected by it, definitely. And and then I guess what that does to the energetics of the unity and that sense of connection, that same
I guess that's when they start talking about the field, you know, like if I heal myself, that I'm healing a part of the field. If I love myself or love my partner or raise healthy children, then I'm, you know, then the field is a bit healthier. And maybe through this global traumatization, we can, for the first time, possibly measure how that works, or if it works, or what effects we might be having. Or I wouldn't expect those measurements to come from, you know, scientists per se, but, you know, the healers, the people that are treating people day in, day out, the people that are actually physically feeling people's bodies, the lady I go to get Feldenkrais treatments, like these people are really noticing like the changes in people's bodies and how, you know, the field feels.
It makes me think of somebody like Joe Dispenza. I don't know if you've to his work, but it would be super interesting. And I'm sure there are interviews floating around with him about this time and kind of, because he's someone that has been doing lots of measuring of.
Yeah, that's true. He does scientific measurements.
Brain waves.
And Bruce Lipton as well.
Yeah. Does some of that stuff. Yeah.
Do you feel like with the work that you're doing, and where it's heading, do you feel like in general there seems to be like a improvement of the general knowledge around sexuality, sexual health, the dropping of taboo and all of this stuff that you experience? Or do you feel like along with the people reaching out to you, there's also the people that are like building higher walls in a way to all of this information?
Yeah, I feel like it's always a mixture, because the people that come to me come with this readiness. It's like,
of course,
okay, hit me.
Yeah.
But the indicator is what I see in education and in schools and the systems and structures that hold like sex education and sex positivity. And I think when I see those six systems and structures change to actually adjust to the, like what human sexuality actually is, then I'm like, oh, okay. I feel a bit of relief that some of the next generations are going to be taken.
And that's happening though?
No. So I don't see that happening.
Yeah. So I saw you post the other day that until sex ed includes pleasure, then it's not really
sex ed.
It's just like farm animals do this and this is how babies are made. It's not sex ed.
Anatomical
biology.
Rhetoric. Yeah. And it just sets young people up for failure. It sets them up for more hiding and more taboo and more confusion and disharmony and self-rejection.
And looking in other places for...
Looking
in unhealthy places for that information, mostly porn, I guess, and these kind of avenues.
Yeah. So sex ed for kids and in families is something I'm very passionate about. When we can liberate as parents, or when I, you know, coaching women who are mothers, and it's like, they come like, how do I talk to my kids about masturbation? You know, I'm like, great, this is good. because
that's the right question.
That's the right question. Putting love and gentleness and celebration and information in front of our kids, age appropriate information, is this empowerment and it's freedom. And it's not attached to an inherent shame about being alive. If we just had sex to have babies, then fine. But we don't. And everyone knows that now. And the structures that we relate
everyone knows that now.
Everyone knows
sex
that.
Sex is fun.
Sex is pleasurable and fun and...
And healing.
Of our human and healing.
You know what? One of the reasons why I got in touch with you for this is because the information around Tantra, which in the West is a whole other thing, but the information around that in South America... In the Spanish language world, which is how I engage with it through my wife, because she's from Chile. There's just so much more better, more embodied, less airy-fairy, floaty, hippie-type conversation around sexuality, sexual pleasure, the healing properties of sexual energy, and the way that reverberates across the planet when you do it the right way. There's so much more information around that in that way in the Spanish speaking world from all different parts of South America and Spain. There's a lot of really awesome, amazing teachers and amazing people doing really awesome things online that are really like solid, like not this kind of like, I don't know, this kind of, not to say that I know everybody's intentions and how they work. I'm sure people benefit from these types of teachings, but there is some kind of a Tantra / Instagram model type person going, you know, happening at the moment in the Western world, in the English speaking world. Tamika rolls her eyes for those people watching the video. She's rolling her eyes.
I get it, but it's just another brand. It's just another commodity. That's why I don't talk about the work that I do is very spiritual and like meaningful on that level. And I don't recommend dildos that are made of rose quartz or obsidian to help you de-armor out your negative. No, there's already so much inherent power and meaning and potency in our sexuality that we don't actually need any of the other rhetoric to add more to it or to add someone's recommendation of the crystal or the thing that's gonna supercharge my healing yoni. My negative energy. No, the healing my yoni. No, that's not how I operate. And I respect it and I get it. And there's a teacher for everyone. Some people need that teaching. And as long as the teaching is happening, I'm happy. But
I think for a lot of people, that's the entry point. Like that's where they first see it and they kind of go, wow, that's the thing I want to learn. And then after a while, hopefully they realize that most shamans that are really shamans don't call themselves shamans. And most spiritual teachers that are real spiritual teachers don't call themselves spiritual teachers. And similar thing with Tantra, even though I think Tantra is a way of life. It's not really a sexual, it's not just like this mad positions. It's a way of understanding, you know, the ebbs and flows of life and elongating some of those peaks and valleys, basically. But I think that there's, in many ways, like you say, there's a marketing, there's an entry point. People need to, you know, like majority of the world don't have these conversations. So, so when they see that first thing, like what? Sex could be like more than... You know, like,
yes, but some people also see that and they don't see themselves represented there. They don't see their 100%. Body shape, their color, their privilege. And so it's like, oh, wow, this idea of sexual liberation isn't for people like me. Mm. It's for people like her or them.
Mm.
And that for me was a huge motivator in the way that I work and the way that I actually educate, because it's amazing. So far from any of that rhetoric. So it's like, you can see yourself over here with me. I am a safe place for you to land inside of your journey. And it's not built on, I say this and this is true. It's like, these are the questions and I invite you to consider, because our authentic sexual expression lives inside of, it's so unique.
Mm.
It could never be anything that I could teach you.
Mm.
Only like provide the right questions, you know?
100%, which is what every great teacher is really, I think, is that facilitator of the questions and the asking of the questions and the opening of the book and, you know, the opening of the path, but not kind of dragging anyone along it. And also, you're not the object of desire that I think a lot of female tantra teachers push, you know, that's part of the selling point. Look at how amazing, you know, these photos are of me on the beach. Come and do my course. Pretty epic. But yeah, very interesting. I'll pass you some information around teachers and courses and things happening in Spanish. There's plenty of really good things that I probably don't know if there's translations, but there's definitely scope to read, you know, certain posts or whatever and see the translated thing and stuff like that. It's pretty amazing seeing as though the South American world and the Spanish world is, you know, strongly Catholic.
Yeah.
It's really amazing to see this kind of revolution, sexual revolution happening in a very mature and informative way in those parts of the world. It's really powerful.
Europe's pretty good too, I think. They're pretty liberal and like agile around this stuff. I think Australia is particularly stuffy and blocked up.
Mm. It's interesting, hey? It's interesting how it all connects. It's interesting how it all, like, every single aspect of it, from racism to sexism to, everything that's, you know, homophobia, all of these things link.
Yeah.
And the way we treat the earth, the way we treat the planet, the way we treat Mother Earth, which they talk about a lot in South America and Pachamama. And
white culture. That's like the most poison kind of
Victorian. Aspect. It's even more than that, actually. It's specifically, which is a friend of mine opened my eyes to, it's Victorian British culture. Mm. This was like this era that came to Australia that was quite, already traumatized, you know, sexually. Yeah. Because that's what that is. That's not your normal state as a lover, as a person who is in love and is loved. That is the state of someone whose parents and grandparents and great grandparents and great great grandparents were traumatized into closing up and then passed that on through physical violence or emotional violence to the next generation and the next generation and the next generation, and then pass it into each other for sure, but also onto the other, you know, which is always easier to dehumanize. Thank you for your work.
Ah, you're welcome. Thank you for seeing me.
It's really important. Super important.
I love it.
So I think that's it. I think we did good.
Yeah, I think so too.
Awesome. So send me links to things and I'll put them in the comments.
Okay.
In the description of this episode, and I'm gonna make a little poem, record a little poem.
Nice.
And I'll send you it when it's done, and I hope people get in touch with you from this, and that the work rolls on.
It's great. It's changing the field, baby.
Just changing the field, baby.
It's like, it doesn't matter if one person hears it or a million. It's just the next little
seed.
Tell
that to Will next time he's having a bad time. Just be like, we're just changing the field, baby. We're just changing the field.
Changing the field. I'll let you know that most of my links will be associated with what my kind of the orgasmic mama, which is like me more specifically talking to mums as the place for healing family systems and structures, like actually liberating her to a point where she's owning her frequency can then heal so much.
100%.
That'll be what the links are mostly about.
Awesome. Beautiful.
Thanks for chatting with me.
No worries, Tamika. Thank you.
Okay. Take care.
Peace. Ciao.
Bye. Bye.
Make love. With sweat beads like planets orbiting around your bodies. With their name engraved across your chest. Your spine is the Himalayas and their shoulder blades two peaks of the Andes. Let the dust hang in the room as you slowly split the atom. All migration patterns and rocking boats melt into sweat and salt water. The tides purge through you, breaking and revealing, breaking and revealing, breaking and resealing. And when you finish deep breathing the world back together, keep their skin stuck beneath your fingernails as you walk home between the rubble. There is no guilt in this. To know you have been loved is to know what you were made of. March between the judgment of holy men and those who've lost faith in ever finding love again. Make love despite them, to spite them, and next time, do it for them. This world is full of reasons to crawl into our corners and whisper the word love like it was a sinful curse. But love is always working. Love is the hardest working word and emotion that we have. It is a mother's patience, a revolution's reason, a lost child's instincts, a soldier with a photo of his love folded in his fist, placing one broken foot in front of the other, crawling out of the trenches on his way home to that love. Love is what has kept us alive. Remember that day? When she looked at you with just a hint of Aphrodite, back when you were half a Casanova, standing nervous by the bar in your new haircut and way too much cologne. This has been going on forever. For millions of years, us organisms have been doing the dance with evolution, parasites dating pathogens. Now, they've proven that sleeping with someone just once means that a part of their DNA actually becomes a part of yours, and you look like at least 50 people that I'd love to fall in love with. Remember when we made new languages together on nocturnal nights in bedrooms from Melbourne to Mississippi, kissed our ways out of trouble and torment, forgot our own names for hours at a time? Remember when it was over and we tattooed poetry on the dead bodies of our love affairs? Now, old historians with stockings and foot fetishes say it's the history of wars that have made us who we are, but love is how we survived it. And on my hardest days, all I need to know is that deep inside the rules of the galaxy, love exists, that even in quantum physics, opposites attract, that the Big Bang was a climax, that dolphins made love for fun beneath the waves undulating with the seaweed, and same-sex love is found within some of our greatest species, because love is love, 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 and it always has been. There is no guilt in this. To know we have been loved is to know what we are made of.